everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you live a more positively minded life by understanding. The more you understand, my friends, the better life is. The more you understand, the less triggered you get. A man came to me yesterday and he said to me, I have this wife who is just screaming and yelling all the time and I have to leave her and I have to leave my children. And I said, but if she's screaming and yelling all the time, it must be something is wrong. He said, yes, but she's, you know, she's really bent out of shape. She's really crazy and therefore I've got to leave her. And I said, but if she's crazy, then why wouldn't you treat that like any other illness? If she had cancer, would you leave her? You know, would you leave her if she had a broken leg? And he said, because the craziness is just, I don't understand it. And that was the basis of it. To understand. If you understand, then what people do very often that you find so harmful and so difficult and so confusing changes and you begin to understand. You begin to understand and you don't become as reactive. And there's so much to understand. There are so many factors. One of the many factors that we deal with is our perception. You know, we see, we smell, we touch, we hear. We talked a lot about smell recently and about how the olfactory senses dictate so many of our behaviors and things that we do, but I was curious about eyes. I was talking about seeing with someone. Eyes, they kind of fascinate me. Things that we don't understand about seeing, about color, about where eyes come from, about what eyes are, about, you know, how does it develop? Is it, how come men have more colored blindness than women? What's it like to be colorblind? What is color all about? You know, we have a field called, believe it or not, color psychology. Now, both in art and anthropology, color is used in almost every culture to investigate the effect of it has on people. So when somebody's deciding to do something for advertising and they want to advertise a new thing to you, they want to know what color package they should put it in. Does red always work? Wait a minute. If red is attractive to you, is red attractive to everybody? I knew some people who were trying to buy a painting for the house the other day, and one person loved a big splotch red flower on the wall, and the other person wanted a nice, secret, wooded scene with barely any color in it. What's the difference between the two people? Who's right? Who's wrong? He said, look, it dresses up the house. She said, no, it's too irritating. What we've learned is that certain colors trigger certain reactions in the brain, and the reactions that they trigger will make you feel one way or another. Just for example, one of the longest studies I saw, one of the most extensive studies at Rutgers, I think it was, had to do with color shape, object shape, and the amygdala. The amygdala is this tiny little structure in your brain that you could blame for everything. It's the one that eats the homework. You know, I mean, when you get overly nervous at times and you can't get things done and you would love to blame somebody, like, you know, that's where the dog ate the homework expression comes from. It's your amygdala. It was just firing too much. The amygdala is what gives you nightmares in the middle of the night. The amygdala is the thing that gives you night sweats and night terror, because the amygdala is the seat of anxiety. And in the amygdala, when it is overfiring or when it's firing like crazy, you have reactions. The amygdala is your danger signal. It's the thing that tells you that there's some danger around, some threat around. The amygdala is kind of an amazing pea-sized organ, you know, in the brain. So when they did a study and they were able to hook into people and animals' amygdala, to see what triggered an amygdalic response and what didn't. And they showed it the shape of objects. And here's what it found. Any sharp object or any object with sharp corners, when seen by whoever's amygdala you were fooling around with, the amygdala fired, said danger, when it saw a sharp object or a sharp corner. Whereas smooth corners, soft corners, curves, it said safety. They did this very extensive study, of which I'm looking at one of these, 20-page reports in 9-point print. And it took them years to do this, and that's what they found out among the likes or dislikes. You don't like a briefcase because it has sharp edges. You have a negative response to it. People have anything that's sharp, anything that's edged, knives mean danger. Curves mean safety. I wonder if that's why we like curvaceous things, like curvaceous people. Think about the curves of the human body. There are so many. Men and women have so many nice curves. Not sharp angles. If you were physically fit and everything came to a sharp angle, you'd look terrible. Imagine shoulders that had a 90-degree angle and had no curve to them. Oh, he's really fit, right, straight. You look terrible. You look like a stick figure. Okay, so the eyes are the windows to the amygdala, right? And what they do is they tell you danger or no danger according to what you see. Colors, they've tried to, over time, do that also with colors. Here's how the colors are seen. The common connotation of color, gray, elegant, humble, respect, reverence, stability, subtlety, wisdom, anachronism, boredom, decay. These are the words that people associate with the word gray. Mourning, as in M-O-U-R-N. Formality, neutrality, gray. Some people love gray. People love gray, especially people who want to stay gray-like. White. White is perceived as light, reverence, purity, snow, peace, innocence, cleanliness, simplicity, security, humility, hope. White is associated with the month of January, by the way. And gray, by the way, is associated with March. March, gray. Black is associated with absence, with power, with sophistication, with formality, with elegance, with wealth, mystery, evil, death, fear, anonymity, rebellion, anachronism, anarchism, sorrow, fashion, slimming, and black is associated with January also, by the way. But black is like power. Red is passion, strength, energy, fire, love, sex, excitement, speed, heat, arrogance, ambition. So here's a question. Why would you want to have gray when you could have red? Huh? Ask me, and then ask me what my heritage is. Because if you come from north of the equator, or the further away you get from the equator, the more tends to be your preference for gray. Yes, people in the Caribbean, they love sharp colors. They love red and green and blue and colors popping out at you. Right? People up in Norway and Sweden, you don't see colors up there. You see gray. A lot of gray. Blue. Blue's a color. Now, there's the most popular color. When people are asked, what's your favorite color? Like I'll ask you, what's your favorite color? And you're going to say, 14% of you are going to say blue. Yep, 14%. 11% are going to say red. 3% are going to say white. Another 4% are going to say orange, believe it or not. 1% says brown. No, I'm not making it up. It's right here. 8% say pink. Red is 11%. Black is 12%. Purple is 12%. Means 1 out of 8 people, right, say purple. And generally, blue is the favorite. Green is a second favorite. Then comes purple. Black is tied. Purple, black, and red are tied. Now, what is interesting about this, my friends? Nothing. There's plenty interesting about it because you'd be amazed how many factors we're affected by. You know, I mean, if red is the color of blood, don't you think red would scare us? Don't you think red would be a scary color to see? In nature, you know, maybe we wouldn't want to see red, but anyway, we're going to talk more about this because there are things, you know, I mean, there are things that people are so different. I mean, just for example, let me go to this for a minute. The reason in different countries, you could have a totally different meaning to each color. And there was a study, let me see if I can find that for you. It was in, it's going to be here. There it is. I got it. Okay, now, let's say you say the same color and you go to a different culture. Right, how are they perceived? And how is color perceived in Japan? What do you think their order of color is? Do you think that they feel the same way about colors that we do? No. In Japan, here we are. And this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, by the way. It's stuff is intriguing. Everything is intriguing. Japan's flag is a graphic representation of its title as the Lord of the Rising Sun, right? The land of the rising sun. The sun disk in the flag's center is so recognizable and simple. The use of red represents life and vitality. Symbolically, the culture is also regarded to have the power to ward off evil. So red in Japan is a powerful color to ward off evil and its power and its vitality. Black, however, is a mysterious color. Speaks of night, the unknown, non-existence, it's solemn, and it's an unlucky color in Japan. White is not the color of purity as much as it is the color of the gods. It's sacred, it could represent purity, it's used at weddings and funerals. In Japan, blue is representative of the theater. People don't wear blue. Green is a positive color. Orange is recolored as the color of love. See, what do you consider the color of love? You think it's red? You think it's blue? You think it's purple? Put the two together. So there are so many different versions of it and so many different things that we can see when we look at color, my friends, that we have to ask the question, are all of our preferences funny? Is the things that we see funny? Why does one person, and here's what I've come up with for you, why does one person like one color as opposed to another color? Why? And we have answers to that for you. Here's my basis. My belief is that if you are depressed, and you tend to be depressed, your preference for color shows how you feel about your depression. If you're depressed and you don't mind being depressed and you find safety in depression, like if you're a romantic kind of person who kind of likes, you know, just laying around and being melancholic and enjoying the depth of things but in a quiet kind of way, well, then the colors you tend to prefer are the colors that will not stimulate you. See, then you want to stay the same. And I say this category, well, England. In London, you know, nobody likes to get too excited in England. And they kind of like to stay calm. They like the weather. The weather is gray. So, you know, in many parts of England, people never tasted garlic ever. They've never had it ever. They don't eat pepper. They like foods that have very little flavor to it, kind of bland, but that's the preference. The preference is we have a common mood. In our common mood, we feel love. We like to keep our mood calm. And don't come into town wearing a red shirt, mister. Get out of here. We don't want you so much. We don't want to see that kind of thing. We want to maintain a status quo. So if you want to maintain a status quo, you don't want to get excited. Now, of course, what does excitement mean? Excitement means dopamine. Excitement means excitement in the body. Excitement means hormones going off right and left and neurotransmitters. And the more you get excited, the more you get fired up. So if you see the color red in bright, blotchy colors, you feel a lift, many of you. Some of you will feel an abrasion. Some of you will hate it. You hate the color red. You can't stand it. Not just the color red, but you don't want to see it. And if it's going to be there, you want it subdued. Think about cars. You know, you see a bright red car. Well, there are very few bright red cars. They stand out, but there are very few of them. Usually they're dark red. Usually it's kind of like, you know, lay back a little bit with that color, mister. Or blue. How much do you want to see robin's egg blue? How much do you want to see bright, bright blue coming across your eyes? No, no, no. People like that darker blue. They want it not to be invasive. People don't want you changing their chemistry for them. Unless you're all in agreement. See? Now, let's say you're in the Caribbean. Now, I'm wearing red and you're wearing red. Okay. Now, I wear my color and you wear your color. Okay. You know? Because we are colored folks. We wear colors. And in certain parts, if you will find it in down in Spain, I am sure you find a lot of colors. And in Italy, you find a lot of colors. And, you know, in the Caribbean, you find a lot of colors. And Miami. Miami, for sure, has a lot of colors just as well. In Miami, you have... people are wearing, and the designers are all putting out a lot of colors. People in Mexico is filled with colors. So it seems that the closer you are to desiring a kind of a stimulation, the more color you like, and the more you want to not be stimulated, the more subdued colors you like. Unless you're overweight, then you always like black. Because it helps hide some of those extra folds. Knowing that, I say that with knowledge. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. You know, there are things that could happen to your eyes. Did you ever notice the difference in people's eyes? Like, what do they mean if you see somebody with blue eyes? What do you feel? Do you feel an automatic trust and a kind of a wisdom in blue eyes? And brown eyes are associated with passion and depth, you know? And you see brown eyes and they kind of more represent a kind of a sexy depth. Whereas blue eyes may represent something that attracts you, but it's not necessarily the same kind of sexual attraction. It's a different kind of an attraction. And gray eyes usually are enigmatic and mysterious. You know, and green eyes are always intriguing in some way, but you can never figure them out. Where do green eyes come from? We used to think that that brown eyes were dominant and blue eyes were recessive, and we used to think that sometime if you had a parent and they had one blue-eyed and one blonde-haired, you know, blue-eyed and a blonde-eyed, you can't have a blonde-eyed person. If you had a blue and a green, maybe you'd get blue-green. It doesn't work that way. The way that eyes work is they work genetically. You have a dominant gene, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it carries one color as a dominant gene as opposed to another. So you're either going to have brown, which is the most common, right, or you're going to have blue. Or you're going to have green, or you're going to have gray, and if you get into trouble with somebody and you have a fight, you may have a black eye. Who knows? There are people who have troubles with their eyes. You know, thyroid conditions, right? There are certain thyroid conditions, Graves' disease, that make your eyes seem like they're forward in your head and they're bulging somewhat. It's something's a spot. There are certain forms of depression where if you look at a person, their eyes are set backwards. You know, and it seems like their brow is covering their eyes. There are people with shifty eyes. Hey, do you ever speak to anybody who can't look at you? And they won't look you in the eye and they can't? Or you may be somebody who can't look people in the eye. How much do the eyes have it? You know, I mean, the eyes are telling you so much stuff. We've learned that if somebody's answering a question for you, and if you're asking a question and somebody, you want to ask a question, a person, what do you feel? Now, if they're telling you what they feel, their eyes are going to tend to look down. Because when you're trying to describe what you feel, you kind of, just think about it, you know, what are you feeling? You look down a little bit, your eyes get a little droopy, and you look downward. But when you're trying to create something, when you're trying to think, then your eyes usually go up and usually go up to the right. Now, that's usually an indication that when you ask a person what they feel and they're really telling you what they think, or sometimes if one of the tests of is a person telling you the truth, is if you ask them a question directly and they stutter, they stop in between answering, and then they're looking up with their eyes as they're trying to make up an answer. And it's one of the things that detectives and other people who try to judge whether people are telling the truth or not run into. Have eyes captured your soul? Has somebody's eyes ever captured you? You know, what do your eyes tell you? What have you learned about looking into someone's eyes? Thinking that gazing directly into someone's eyes is a beautiful experience? You know, that's a beautiful experience. I know a man who had mastered the gaze. He had gray eyes. And he said to me, he said, oh, women love to look at my eyes. He said, so I look at them. He says, I just fog out. He says, I know they need to look at me. He says, so I'm not really looking at them. I'm just thinking about different things. But I've learned to keep my eyes there so they can keep looking at me. And they love it. They think I'm in love with them. Hey, what's the power of eyes? So I would like to ask you about your experience and your visual experience and your experience related to your eyes, because I think the eyes are one of the important things that we deal with. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to be talking much more about eyes and what is attractive and what is not attractive to you and how eye color can change. You know, the pupil size changes. Do you know that? The iris is a muscle that expands and contracts to control the pupil size. The pupil enlarges in dimmer lighting and grows smaller in brighter lighting. Pupil also shrinks when you focus on near objects. So like, you know, when people are beady-eyed, they're like looking at a distance. Their eyes get real small. The pigments in the iris compress or spread apart, changing the eye color a bit every time. So if an eye is wide open, it looks a certain color. Sometimes when it's closed, it looks another. And eye color can change with age. It happens to 15% of the Caucasian population. Those are the people who have lighter eye colors. One, very brown eyes very often turn hazel, which is a combination of brown and green. And, you know, what about eyeglasses, friends? What about eyeglasses? How do you feel? Now, I've worn eyeglasses most of my life, but I have a friend who started wearing eyeglasses when she was 40. And she reading glasses, you know what I mean? Now, what's this all about? Who built this into nature? What, were we only supposed to live to be 40 years old and then your eyes go away and who cares? Well, I figured it out. Nature makes your eyes go fuzzy as you get to be 40 years old, because it wants you to not focus on the wrinkles of the people you love, you see? If you look at them and you look at their faces, you don't see the wrinkles because you don't have your eyeglasses on. God forbid you should ever put on your eyeglasses, your reading glasses, and look in the mirror. You'd be horrified. Anyway, reading glasses, and then, of course, if you have glasses, and you need your glasses to find your glasses because you lose your glasses. And losing your eyeglasses becomes such a thing. We become so dependent on these things that we have. Everybody carries them. Some people have, you know, have them permanent in their eyes. And some people have eye surgeries. And there are so many different things that people do nowadays to improve their vision. They have color changes, too. They have eye contacts that are different colors. You know, and I know people who are getting the surgery so that they have perfect vision now, even though their eyes got older, but they lose something in depth vision. They're talking about it. It's not such a hot thing. Who wants to fool around with your eyes? Imagine you were blind. I went to a restaurant once in Paris. And in this restaurant, you go downstairs, and a person who cannot see, a person who is blind, takes you into this absolutely pitch black room. Now you're wearing, you could see, your eyes are open, but you can't see anything because it's pitch black. And you're guided to a table where I sat down at a table, and I sat down at this table and I had, and they served me food and drink. And it was served by people who, you know, who couldn't see. And it was cooked by people who couldn't see. So now I had food that I couldn't see. And I was encouraged to eat and just try to identify it. It was an amazing experience. I couldn't tell a pea from a piece of lamb. I couldn't tell the difference. I mean, I said, what was I eating? I said, oh, that was lamb. And she said, no, it was peas. You know, they told me later. I mean, it was so remarkable how, without my normally dependent visual cues, I couldn't do it. On top of which, you know, it was the most amazing thing. You would think, if you can't see, your smell gets sharpened. It did not happen. It did not sharpen my smell. But what did happen was noise. My hearing somehow became more acute. My ears got so sharp that the very sound of the people at tables nearby, who were also in this dark room experimental theater kind of dinner place, the noise was so loud, it was unbelievable. It was deafening. It was like, and I know it was no louder than it would normally be anywhere else, but without vision, sound affects you differently. Without vision, a sound is going to be much louder because you can't identify it. So, I tell you, my friends, your eyes have a great deal to do with what's going on. Did you ever notice how much you're still attracted to or not attracted to the person that you once were madly in love with? Do you ever notice how, you know, they just don't look the same to you anymore? And you don't have that same feeling? What do you think happens? Do you think it's just them changing? Or is it that there is some chemistry, something inside you that changes so that your eyes say, it's time for something new? You know? I think it's very confusing. I don't think it's a great science. I don't think we understand enough about how our eyes work and how we see work. But I'd like to hear stories from you. When we get back from our break, I would like to hear from you about things related to seeing. And so you take our phone number down, and you'll be calling us just about 4 minutes from now. You'll start calling. So what I want to do is find out from you, if you would, what are things that you have had psychologically have gone on for you that have touched you but had to do with seeing? And I'm not talking about losing your vision, but just what you saw it, how you regarded it. You know, regard, which is to look at in a certain kind of way. First words I ever heard in French were regarder la neige, look at the snow, you know, regard it, get a feeling about it. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. We're going to focus on the senses this week. I want to look at the different senses we have. We're starting off with talking about seeing and how people around the world see different things and different things related to our visual acuity. I will be back with you in a couple of minutes. And of course, the color of all music is different. How about the blues? I'll play you some blues. Be back with you shortly. Thank you. Benny Carter, in case you were thinking, Michael. Who else could that be? The birth of the blues. Benny Carter's one of those old goodies. Oh, my mistake before. I said it was from, did I say Harvard? No, I said it was Rutgers. I was corrected. The visual elements of subjective preference modulate amygdala activation is an article by Moshe Barr. And it was at the Harvard Medical School, not at Rutgers University. And that's the article that told us after 26 pages that people like round things rather than sharp things. Curvy. Curvaceousness makes a difference. We're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900 in just a minute. And it's, in fact, let's see if there's any calls there right now. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
All right. You know, I had an interesting story when I was a little kid. I'm from South America.
Uh-huh.
So I look very Spanish. You know, typical South American, you know, Mexican, Peruvian, you know.
Typical.
That's how I look. Yeah, I look different when I came here. I didn't blend in to the typical American black or white. So when I was a little kid, about 7, 8 years old, I remember my mother would want to take me to school, and I would be embarrassed. And I saw
embarrassed by your skin color because you were like a brown.
I was, well, I don't know if it was the color. I was just different, and I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a kid, you don't appreciate.
It's fascinating. Yeah, go ahead. Please continue.
So what happened was my mother would walk me to school, and I was really embarrassed of being with my mother because I saw her as unattractive because she didn't fit into the norm of everybody else, and neither did I. Now, the interesting part is that my mother happens to be, not that it's so important, but she happens to be incredibly beautiful, physically beautiful. She's a beautiful woman by many standards, but specifically physical. And when I see pictures of her when she's 20 and 30, she's incredibly beautiful. And for her age now, she's still incredibly beautiful. So what I learned from that was that I don't really see with my eyes, but I really see more with whatever my brain is going through at that moment.
And associations therein.
Yeah.
You know, there's fear. So sure, you're embarrassed by your mother. And you were embarrassed by your mother because your mother didn't fit in, which is such a fascinating thing that you're saying to us because, you know, there is certain culture where people are so thin that if Marilyn Monroe walked through today's New York scene, she would be considered fat. You know what
right,
I mean? Marilyn
right.
Monroe was a hefty lady by size, but she would be considered thick, you know, and then...
Right.
And then in other cultures, there are other cultures that I know of where anybody who's under 150 pounds is considered emaciated, and they're talking about women.
That's amazing. It's really interesting.
So your experience, let me ask you something now. What did you learn about your experience? And by the way, you left out your dad. Where was he in this whole thing?
Oh, he's in the picture. He's in there, too. No problem. It's, you know, we're all, I have a totally healthy and loving respect and true love for my parents now.
Yeah, I hear.
Adult.
I hear.
So I really, you know, I've come full circle with that.
See, you're almost really embarrassed. You're almost embarrassed by how embarrassed you were by your parents.
Oh, that's exactly. I couldn't have said it better. I'm ashamed that I would have. But again, I was a kid. I was a kid, you know, and those are thoughts that I didn't share with anyone. They were in my head.
So you got two parts of you functioning. One adult part of you is saying to your parents, you know, I'm sorry, guys. What a terrible thing to have to be embarrassed by you, number one. And another part of you is saying, but as a kid, how did I know? I didn't know any better.
Yeah, but, you know, and it connects with what you're talking about seeing. So what I try to remember now is that, you know, you got to be a little, you know, skeptical of what you see, because what you see is not always, it's really, you don't see just with your eyes,
That's right.
Your heart, your experience.
You see it with you, very often you see with your need, and you see with your fear.
Right, yeah.
And you're talking about seeing with your eyes of fear. Absolutely.
Yes.
Which is one of the things the eyes were built for.
Right,
you know,
to protect you. Right.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much. What's your name, by the way?
Tony.
Thanks for calling in.
Right.
And if you would, my friends, as you call in at 212-209-2900, give me your name when you call in so I'll know how to address you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let me take another call. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Hi, this is Sheila from Staten Island. And how are you?
I'm great, Sheila.
Good. Armand, I want to ask a question. Sometimes when I'm talking to people, they seem to be squinting at me. They'll move their body, their entire body to the side, and they'll look at me like Popeye out of one eye. What does that mean?
Wow. That means that you probably have funny vision. So let me think about this. Have you always been concerned about how people feel towards you? More concerned?
Yes.
You're more concerned than the average person?
Not really. Usually when I've seen that reaction, though, is I feel like I have to pull back somehow. I'm asking a question, but it seems like they're not hearing me, or what's coming out my mouth is not making any sense to them.
And have you always been afraid that you don't make sense to people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for how long? Like when you were a little kid?
Ever since I opened up my mouth, I'm concerned, when I speak, people, they have some kind of, it's like a, how you say it, incongruent reaction to me, like, oh, she speaks, she's verbal. That's how I feel.
Oh. And when you were little, did your mother listen to you?
I don't really remember.
You can't remember ever talking?
I know, I always was more like just watching her. She was like an actress, or she was drawing, or she was telling stories. I don't know if she listened to me. Probably
well,
not.
If she didn't, well, then how did she know you were there?
I don't know, Armand. She was dysfunctional. She was.
I could tell. And you had many children, right? There were many.
I was the oldest.
And you had how many kids? How many brothers?
I was older, two brothers and five sisters.
Okay, so you've got 8 kids. And you've got a mother who's like a stoic actress who's off at a distance, and she's pretty dysfunctional and she could barely function. And somehow she and you were keeping track of the kids to make sure they weren't getting hurt. So she had to look at them. And how do you think she looked at them?
Out of one eye?
Out of one eye, yes, out of one eye, exactly. The way you grew up. The way that your mother regarded you, which was a form of disregard, which is what you're very sensitive to nowadays.
Okay.
People looking at you out of one eye. And what it says to you is the following. It says, you know, when I was little, I needed a mother. And I keep remembering everywhere I go that there's nobody out there who is really, really filling that bill. And so the pain comes back over and over again every time you look at a person who looks at you that way, you know? And I'd be willing to say that there are times that actually they're not thinking of you that way, but that you're just making it up because you're so used to seeing it that way.
Okay.
You know?
I've had 2 distinct experiences, but...
Sure,
you know.
I'm sure you did. I'm going to give you a suggestion of what to do. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
I want you to get a mirror. I want you to buy a 1x1 square tile mirror. You know, you can get those at the paint stores.
Okay.
It's like these tiles you put on the wall. They're a mirror. I want you to put it on a chair. I want you to just sit. I want you to sit on the floor in front of a chair and have this tile on the back of the chair so you can see yourself in it. Okay?
All right.
So far, so good.
Okay.
Then I want you to get a dish, and I want you to buy a plumber's candle. Now, a plumber's candle, you know, is about 3 inches tall. These are the candles that plumbers use to go under sinks before they had flashlights. So it's called a plumber's candle. It's, like, very cheap. They're, like, 25 cents.
Okay.
And I want you to put that plumber's candle in the dish, and I want you to, you know, light a little wax underneath it so it sticks to the dish. And I want you to light it, and I want you to look at yourself in the mirror. And I want the candle to be between you and yourself in the mirror. And I want you to spend a long time looking in that mirror and looking at yourself. I want you to talk to yourself during that entire time, but I want you to look at yourself and find some way to love yourself every minute. as that candle burns down. And a lot of things are going to happen to you because you're going to get tired and you're going to feel like falling down. Don't let yourself fall down. Stay up and stick with that picture. And then keep looking at that mirror and keep looking at that mirror. And when that candle gets lower and lower, it's going to cast shadows upward on your face. And you're going to be looking like you're getting older and older. But keep looking and keep looking. And then the candle's going to flicker and it's going to start to go out and it's going to create a little pool. Don't quit. Keep looking. And then the candle's going to actually go out and then it's going to come back to life. Keep looking. Keep looking. And you'll find somewhere in there, you'll find a way of loving yourself, Sheila. It's just going to take some time, but you'll find a way of correcting your mother's vision of you by giving it to yourself.
Thank you, Omar. I'm going to try it.
Let me know how it goes, okay, Sheila?
All right, then. Bye-bye.
All right, sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So I'm going to repeat that to you. For any of you who want to do it, I highly recommend this. You get a candle, a plumber's candle. You get a tile, and it's called a mirror tile. You could buy those. Of course, you could use any mirror. I like a mirror tile because it has no edges, you know, and they cost a dollar, I think, or $2. And you put it on the back of a chair, and you sit on the floor, and you just keep looking at yourself. And I tell you, friends, if you ever want to make friends with yourself, that candle burning down and changing the shape of your face and the colors of your face is really a remarkable thing. I've seen hundreds of people do this and benefit by it, and I would love to hear from anyone who takes this journey. Send me an email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd like to know your experience. 212-209-2900. So that's visually the most corrective experience I know. It's one of the things that I know in focusing on vision, which we're doing this day today, and we're going to be focusing on the senses all week. Vision today. Another call, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Well, what I find about colors, I find that like in the past like 15 years since I've reached middle age, colors seem to come alive all the time. It's like in the past I would play that game, what's your favorite color and all that, like I had an answer, but really I never did. But now it's not even about favorite color. It's just in the presence of color, it's like color feels like it is life. Color is life, and in a way it is, because colors exist because of light, and life exists because of light. So it's all like connected, although it's not like I don't think about that. I just feel the presence of color, and I feel
great.
Alive.
What's your name, by the way?
Rosellen.
Rosellen. So, Rosellen, let me ask you this question. But it hasn't always been this way, right?
That's right. I mean, before...
So now here's the way it works. It wasn't the colors that changed. It was you that changed.
You think so?
Yes. Yes,
well,
you welcome life back. That's why the colors came back to you.
You know something? Now I almost understand. Like, always I knew for animals it's an aphrodisiac, like the peacock with all the colors. And it's like, how on earth could a color be an aphrodisiac? I never understood that all my life. Now I almost understand it. It's like I could understand you feel so alive in the presence of all the colors. It doesn't even have to be all the colors. It could just be one color at a particular time. Even Bob Dylan, in one of the songs, he says, and all the young people with their bright colored clothes, even he noticed it.
Yeah.
And I'm not an artist. I don't have any artistic thing in me, but I now kind of appreciate colors as being part of the experience of being alive.
Wonderful, Rose Ellen.
It is wonderful.
And your name is Rose Ellen.
That's right. Thank you, Armand.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Of course. Imagine if you're a rose, but you never appreciated color your whole life. Now she likes herself. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I am an artist, and, you know, people talk a lot about their favorite color and everything, but to me, color is a lot relationship, that colors are so different in a relationship to each other, you know.
Very important.
If you have, let's say, a red next to a green, it's a completely different meaning than if you have a red next to a grayish blue.
Well, let me ask you something. Who is the closest person to you in your life?
myself.
Okay, but next to that, second best.
I guess my boyfriend.
Okay, your boyfriend. What color is your boyfriend and what color are you? Give me a symbolic representation. Is it green and red? Is it blue and black? Is it black and...
I really don't see it in that way.
Well, try it.
But I really couldn't.
You mean if you were to paint on a canvas your own color and his color, you couldn't pick from your palette?
Well, all kinds of colors would come out. You know, it would be... like many colors kind of swirling around, you know, coming forward and back and, you know, moods and swings and
so you appreciate
moments.
The changes, that there's no fixed color in relationships, that colors change just as moods change.
Right. But one thing that gets me a lot about sight is sometimes... what another person looks like, also in your mind is what you look like at the moment, even though you don't see yourself. So in your relation to them and in looking at them, there's also this sort of blindness, but you're thinking about what you look like in relation to them.
Give me an example of that.
Well, like women, for instance, when they're together, there's sometimes a lot, you know, who looks like what. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Going on between them. Let's say they're having a conversation. And in some way, there's, let's say, an absent man there, you might say. That's like a third party who would be like looking, or an absent third party who might be looking at one person and then, you know, it's kind of like a rivalry, I suppose.
I hear you.
You know, so that there's like sort of three people there in looking.
That's so true. And I thank you very much for calling in, and thank you for your perception. What's your name?
Amy.
Amy the artist. Thank you, Amy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Colorblindness results from an absence or malfunction of certain color-sensitive cells in the retina, you know? The retina is the nerve layer at the back of the brain that converts light into nerve signals that are sent to the brain. And a person with color blindness has trouble seeing red, green, blue, or any mixture of these colors. So some people can't see blue, some people can't see green, some people can't see red. Some people can see only gray. Normally, the eye has three types of cone cells, which we also remember the rods and the cones. I used to think those were my neighbors. I actually had one neighbor named Rod, and his is his first name, and the other one was Cone. Who lives next to me, C-O-H-E-N. But I thought there was a visual word, the rods and the cones. They're concentrated mostly in the central part of the retina. The term color vision problem is often used instead of color blindness because people with color blindness can see some color, you know, and it's not like it. Some people don't even notice it. Hey, we're going to take one more call, 212-209. 2900. Let's take one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hello, Kathy.
How are you? I'm calling to ask this. I find myself feeling very uncomfortable when I'm in a group, and for some reason I always feel that the speaker, I'm always giving like this eye contact. They are always looking at me, and if I have to ask a question or answer a question, I'm always uncomfortable and lose my sword. And I would like to know, what are your thoughts on that?
So you have this kind of panicky feeling that whenever you're in a room, if the teacher, you know, it's like being in high school. I used to do that in high school. Remember, in high school, if you don't want the teacher to call on you, you look away. You try to make sure he doesn't catch your eye. It never seemed to work. But is it that kind of feeling? I don't want them to look at me. I'm afraid they're going to call on me. I'm afraid they're going to ask me questions.
Yeah, but I find myself staring at them. It's like they are always looking at my direction.
Okay,
and that makes me uncomfortable.
So probably the amount of attention that you give to a speaker is very special. You're probably listening with your whole heart and soul. And that leaves you very vulnerable. And when they see the attention that you're giving them, they want to respond to it because you look like somebody who is going to be very positive, you know? Oh, there's a person looking at me, you know? There's a person who's really taking me in. Yeah. But because you're in one place, which is you're being receptive, you're not feeling so responsive. You don't want to be answering questions. You're there to listen. And some people are like that. They're there to merely take it in, but not necessarily to put it out, because it's just like, you know, they want to be able to observe and see. So I understand it completely. It would be good for you to be in a group of some sort, where in the group you would be able to experience what it's like to do both.
Mm.
You know?
And another question I have, when it comes to colors, I'm more into earth colors, meaning the pastel green, the light yellow, and red. I cannot wear red because the time that I find out about the death of my grandmother, I was wearing all red. So since then, I completely avoid the color red.
So you have, once again, you have excitability stimulated. You know, you're trying to keep yourself from getting overstimulated. And what happens when the person talks to you, they stimulate you. They're calling on you. And you're trying to keep things under a certain level. You like to just keep things subdued. You know, you have a hypersensitivity to being stimulated from a suddenness on the outside. That's what it shows, and it's perfectly normal.
Oh, okay.
But you do have some things to deal with your grandma, you know?
Oh, okay.
There's
okay.
A lot of stuff there. Hey, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends. I do have to be going.
Thank you.
Right, bye-bye. And you can hear this on thepositivemind.com. You can hear this again if you missed any part of it.
Okay.
I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.